Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotier, the chef in a hat.
We have a big show for you today. We're here every week, Saturday and Sunday. So tune in on your dial or get us online, some sort of podcast, anything like that. I'm a restaurateur, author, and actually this week I'm a consultant. The businesses I'm consulting on for Nordstrom are opening this coming week. In Manhattan, so
congratulations.
That's the hat I'm wearing this week. I'll be there the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, coming back on Wednesday from Manhattan. So looking forward to that. It's going to be interesting to see. This is the new Nordstrom store in Manhattan is quite spectacular.
Can't wait to see all the videos and all the pictures.
I'm sure there'll be an online presence. Something tells me. Yeah.
Something tells me too.
It's in the largest residential or tallest residential building in the world, all residential.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. 1,500 feet. And it sticks out like a finger, like on your hand, because all the buildings around it are so short, it just sticks out like your finger.
Wow.
And looks over Central Park. Well, it looks over everything, right? But Central Park especially. 57th and 7th, I'll be there on Tuesday if you guys want to drop in. Come say hi at the Nordstrom opening in Manhattan. Let's see. We got a big show. We're going to reveal our picks for Absolute Kitchen Essentials. Woohoo! That's a big day right there. We're going to look at the latest trends in food and dining. It's our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge to wrap up the show. And it's National Seafood Month, so we'll celebrate with some tips on sustainable seafood with the people from the Wild Salmon Seafood Market. They're going to join us a little bit later in the show. I hear they have a surprise.
I thought it was Seafood Month every month in Seattle. There's only
well,
one
sort of,
about
sort of
seafood?
Is, sort of is, but it'll be a surprise. We're going to start today with a quote from Julia Child. People who love to eat are always the best people. Don't you think?
People who love to eat are always the best people. Yeah, that's how you're supposed to say it.
How do you think Julia would feel about that accent?
She'd go, you know, nice try, Frenchie.
All right, let's go ordinary to extraordinary. And I don't know if you even know what porridge is. Do you, chef?
I believe I read that in a little children book when my children were small.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, porridge for the bears?
Yeah, porridge is like oatmeal.
Yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah, yeah.
How would you take an ordinary bowl of blah horse food, like oatmeal?
I would take some dry raisins. I would soak them up in rum.
Dry raisins?
Dry raisins. I would soak them up in rum. I would toast some walnuts, and I would put a little maple syrup and put the whole thing into my porridge.
Mm.
Aren't you impressed, Mr. Douglas?
Sounds delicious.
And I came up with something.
You know what I would do? And you know what I do is I take butter and I brown it.
Yeah.
You know, until it gets all dark. Not super dark, but browned butter. And then I add maple syrup to that so that it's hot. And then I pour that over the porridge.
Mm.
And then I get that blood sugar issue. It's just crazy, man. It just makes it spikes me like crazy. All right. Iceberg lettuce. Do you ever use iceberg? I don't picture
I
picture Chef Rotero, I don't think of like a wedge of iceberg.
Well, it's not because of Chef Rotero. It's just I wasn't raised with iceberg. I mean, to me, the closest thing to an iceberg is a cabbage. And I love slaw, and I love, you know, hard lettuce as well.
Mm-hmm.
I use jam lettuce a lot, which is, you know, that's the closest I get to the crunchiest
of lettuces. Jam lettuce is like a little small head of romaine or
right.
any
it's
of
just
those
basically stuff. Baby romaine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's the closest I get to the crunchiest. That and endive, you know, these are the one I look for. When I look for very hard crunch salad, that's what I'm going to look like. To be honest, iceberg lettuce, I don't remember the last time I tried an iceberg lettuce.
Okay, so we're not going to go to you then. Let's skip that one.
Well, no, wait. You're the one with the iceberg. What would you do?
Me, to make it extraordinary?
Yes.
Oh, you know, when I grew up, I mean, it's just so unlike your family. When I grew up...
But it's fine.
My mother would take the iceberg, she'd take the core out and then kind of pick the big leaves, and then she'd put the pile of leaves in front of you with a bowl of sugar.
What?
Because it was too bitter for her. And so we would take the leaf of iceberg. We would literally take a teaspoon of sugar and put it on the leaf, roll it up like a little package, and then eat it.
Did they have, they didn't even have fish sauce or anything like that?
No, they didn't have fish sauce. So. Can you believe that? I still can't believe
it. Do I believe it? Yes, I believe it because I can see the differences of trend that have existed in the last 40 years in eating in America. So I've been...
We put sugar on everything.
You know,
like a slice of tomato, a teaspoon of sugar on top.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
The only thing I remember that got salt instead of sugar was my mother liked salt on her cantaloupe.
Very funny. Well, because it's already all sugar.
I don't know, but that's
the sugar's already in it.
That's kind of what I. And she would grow her own lettuce in the garden, and you know she had 8 kids, and you know that's why I find it funny when people say sugar makes kids crazy. You know, they get all wild. Kids are just wild and rambunctious. Doesn't take any sugar.
Yeah,
that's just what they do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, lima beans.
Ooh, love lima beans.
Make an ordinary boiled lima bean extraordinary for me, chef.
So I would take probably some bacon. Number one, I would render some bacon, dice it in lardon size, which is basically...
I'm calling fowl.
You're calling fowl?
I'm fowl. That's a fowl. It's
no, hold on.
You have to be able to do a vegetable without bacon.
Okay.
Anyone could put bacon in anything.
Well, I was going to do some nice bacon and then use the bacon fat rendered... to saute some nice chanterelles, which are in season
now
right now.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Well, yeah, sauteed chanterelle in bacon fat. Are you kidding me? That's like double whammer. And then you put that bacon in the chanterelle.
I'm just saying bacon is a cop-out.
Okay, so never mind the bacon. Fine, we'll use eggplant
I want the depth. I want your inner soul of lima
beans. I
use
slices, and I fry them very quickly in olive oil, dice them, and then I'll use that olive oil left over in the pan to saute my chanterelle. Finish with a little fresh thyme and put all that on top of my beans and have a wonderful bean stew. And no, I would not put cheese on top. Not for this one. Mm,
I would.
Harissa? Yes.
Pretty much cheese on anything is good by me.
Well, that's the problem. You talk about cheating with bacon.
I know. It's a cop-out.
It's the same thing.
It's total cop-out. Absolutely. Cheese. Absolutely cop-out.
Fresh herb right on top. That's it.
That's, you know, I guess I kind of would say if you can get fresh lima beans instead of what we grew up with, which was the frozen stuff or the canned lima beans, just horrific things. I don't know how I survived.
You know what? It's probably why you're such a great chef, Tom Douglas.
I'm just saying, if you can get fresh lima beans, they're actually edible. And I think just a lovely, you know, lemon, fresh tarragon, you know, like a little fresh, yeah, delicious. Okay.
And if you have tarragon or basil left in your garden and been lucky enough to have it die, use it now.
All right. Up next, it's our Taste of the Week. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. Lively audience. Thank you. Everyone's just desperate for their breakfast like me. They'll clap for anything right now. Just throw them a bone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'll clap. Just give me my sandwich.
You know, if you two could be here and join us for only $20. Comes with breakfast and hot coffee and a chance to buy one of these lovely new Seattle Kitchen aprons.
Nice.
Seattle Kitchen Show aprons.
Yeah.
Very
you guys
exciting.
Enjoying yourself so far?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's see. So, favorite taste of the week. Tina, you put this in here because I feel like you had something to say.
Well, you know, I really enjoyed this segment because I think that people love to know where you guys eat out around Seattle or what you cook at home.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is our round table moment where we can all share the places that we go. We all eat out quite a bit. And I had a lovely experience at the Carlisle Room. I'm not saying this because you're the host of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Just so happened to be. It's not easy because, as you know, I went whole food plant-based not long ago, which means I eat no dairy, no meat, no eggs, so it's hard to find something on a menu.
Yeah.
You guys at the Carlisle Room are making a chickpea fava fritter that was incredible. It had so much flavor, which is often
good.
Hard
yeah.
to find. Mm-hmm. Almond tahini, cilantro, mint carob syrup, and pickled pepper.
Wow.
I imagine those are the pickled peppers that came from Prosser Farm.
Mm-hmm.
So it was,
you're going to see that on the menu for a while.
We pickled a pack of pickled peppers, I tell you that.
Yeah.
Without Peter.
So it was quite delicious over there at the Carlisle Room. I also had a fresh hot beer from Georgetown Brewery. Couple that with, and it was delightful.
You know, the hops are just being picked right now, so there's a lot of fresh hops around town. See, anybody that's selling serious beer is selling some fresh hop beer right now.
Yeah,
so.
Quite delicious.
Sean, one of our assistant producers here today, sound engineer, not the usual Sean, but Sean 2.
Sean Fox.
I like to call you Sean 2.
I like the name.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, tell us about your taste of the week.
I live up north, and there was a new bakery.
Like near Santa Claus? Or
my neighbor two doors down.
Neighbor two doors down.
Two doors down, yeah. But there's this French bakery that just opened up on Lake City Way, 80th and 15th, called Anglais. And they do this fantastic little Marionberry croissant with the jam kind of at the bottom and a really nice dusting of powdered sugar over the top. It just... cracked it open with my morning espresso, and oh, it was very tasty.
That good sounds so good.
Say the name of that bakery again.
I could be pronouncing this wrong. I've been practicing my French, but I'm not great. Henri.
So the same as the one down on 70th and 12th in Ballard is the same company? There's an Honoré bakery down there?
I'm not sure.
Maybe Tina will look that up for us. Okay. And so when you have a croissant, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for something that's a little bit buttery. I like a nice bite on the exterior, mm-hmm. but it's to kind of like fall apart. I always feel like a good croissant melts a little bit in your mouth, but not the exterior. And then I really like it. I'm a sucker for good jam.
And Chef Terry, when you're getting a croissant, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for a very crispy outside, mm-hmm. and I'm looking for a very flaky inside. Mm-hmm. I want the inside to be... I want to see those circles on the inside, but mm-hmm. I want them to be separated, and I want them to be light. Mm-hmm. And I'm with Sean. A good jam to go with a croissant can be the most delightful thing in the world.
What do you think when you see somebody having a croissant, a good one, like say at the Dahlia Bakery, and you see him putting butter on it?
Oh, I love that. I mean, it's kind of like butter on butter. Why
not? It's definitely butter on butter. Does anyone in our audience know what percentage of butter is in a Dahlia Bakery croissant? 66%. So when you put butter on a croissant, and that's not untypical for
a
French
kind of
bakery.
Like it's kind of like 100%. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You just can't do that every day, and you know we all know that. But if you're going to have a croissant, treat yourself. Make mm-hmm. it special.
And make it a good one.
Yeah, make it a good one. Look for a good one and wait for the good one. Don't buy a crummy one, you know, six in a box or whatever that's been there for 3 weeks. No.
That's just a safe way.
Just buy it. No, they
probably that's what
don't.
I'm saying. For 6 weeks, I'm agreeing
but
with you.
But just go to a bakery and get the fresh bake of the day.
Make a game out of it.
Yeah.
Pick out the 10 bakeries you want to visit in town and just go try them. Try them next to each other, and then within 10 stops, you'll know.
Give yourself 10 weeks, one per week. Mm-hmm. At 66%, awesome. That's what you should allow yourself. Otherwise, we're going to be blamed again that we use too much butter.
Go ahead. Your turn, chef.
My turn. I was just in Memphis, Tennessee, raising some money for kids' cancer at St. Jude Hospital, Le Bonheur Hospital, actually. Mm-hmm. And fabulous event, 40 chefs and everything. And being in Memphis, every time I go to Memphis, there's always one thing I... try to do is to get some ribs at Rendezvous. I don't know if you've ever heard of Rendezvous, but it is probably the most famous barbecue joint in America.
Well, it's probably not in America, but it certainly is considered the best in Memphis, and that's saying something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had the pork ribs, and they were delicious, but then I had the lamb ribs, which I didn't know about, and they were scrumptious.
Yeah.
OMG.
The only problem with lamb ribs, if you can picture a rack of pork spare ribs, right, and they're the big bone ones, and there's this fat pocket there that you can easily just take out.
Right.
The lamb ribs, there's this odd fat pocket in the lamb ribs, and you have to either just scrape it aside or just go for it and enjoy it. But can you tell folks what makes the Rendezvous barbecue Memphis style?
Well, to me, I think it's the flavor of the brine they use, the sauce.
The sauce.
That they make is different. You know, it's got vinegar, definitely a good vinegar flavor, and a good spice. It's balanced in the spice. It's not dry rub
It is dry rub.
Well, I mean, it's dry rub to start, but then they...
No, it's dry rub to finish. When they bring them off the out of the smoker, they do a dry rub to finish before
they
serve
that. Okay, cool.
And that's what makes them unique.
Yeah. They're delicious. I mean, could use some right now with that famous breakfast Tom Douglas sandwich.
Yeah, there you go.
Making some lamb ribs. Those are delicious, Tom. They're very, very good. And I didn't realize until I told you that it was your favorite as well.
Yeah, absolutely favorite. I guess my taste of the week, I was just in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I'm reminded about as much as I tease Tina about having gone plant-based, and you're so crazy about the whole thing. You won't even eat oil.
No.
And I understand that, but I tend to kid about it. And then I was at this golf club where the morning breakfast was avocado toast, and I said, wow, if I order that, Tina would be really proud of me.
Oh, I hope you did. I hope you did.
I did. I did order it with a side of sausage and two poached eggs and hash browns. But the avocado toast,
the avocado toast got lost somewhere.
Go on about those avocados.
No. Well, they did one thing that I can't stand, which is they put on way so much avocado I couldn't eat it all.
Yeah.
It was, I had to scrape half of it off. But what I loved is a good, they had a good seed bread, like a hearth-baked seed bread with a nice crust. And then they actually toasted it hard, like give it a good
I like it too.
A good toasting rather than this soft, mushy stuff.
Right.
Then they put the custardy avocado on top, and then they put the sausage on the side. And then
then they put all the unhealthy things in there.
The funniest thing is this is a very fancy place.
Sounds great.
Very shishy place. And the sausage, I swear to God, was Jimmy Dean sausage. Everything else was homemade, but anyway, avocado toast. I know it's cliche at this point, but I love it in the morning with a poached egg or two poached eggs with avocado toast. It is a good way to start the day.
I think the reason it took off so highly is because it's delicious. There is nothing wrong with an avocado toast. If the bread is beautiful, grain bread, nicely toasted, and the avocado is perfectly ripe, and then you spread that on top of
a little lime juice.
I mean, this summer is probably the summer when I ate the most avocado and tomato salad.
Yeah. Anyway, cliche, but I loved it, and I thought Tina would be so proud of me.
I am. Before we finish, I got a quick correction on our bakery. Honoree is not related to the Ballard one.
Okay.
So it's on Lake City. I'll put it on Facebook for you.
Okay, good. Up next, it's Seafood 101 right here in Seattle on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show right here at the Hot Stove Society. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotrudo, the chef in the hat.
We have a fun segment here at Seafood 101, National Seafood Month, all this month long. And then next month, we're actually going to be at the event Quest Event Center or CenturyLink Event Center and doing the boat show down
Maritime.
There. Maritime show, yeah. Anyway, let's talk seafood. We have two guests here, Domus Whitaker. He is in charge of the Fisherman's Terminal area for the Port of Seattle. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And we also have Paula Cassidy here. She owns the Wild Salmon Seafood Market there at Fisherman's Terminal. And I was just telling you, I go by there in the morning on my way to the Bay Cafe.
Which is a great place for breakfast.
It's a hidden gem, I think.
I agree.
For years and years, I went to Vera's in Ballard. And then they closed down. You know, Nick closed it down, and his son has got a pizza restaurant there at nighttime now. But so I went to the Bay, and I guess, God, this menu just looks so similar to Vera's. Well, turns out Nick owns part of that, too.
Yeah.
Did not know. Anyway, welcome to the show. Hooray for Seafood Month. Where do we want to start? Tell me about Fisherman's Terminal. I just was down there. I go about once a week, but they've got a whole new memorial kind of sidewalk being built down there. Tell me about that a little bit.
First, Fisherman's Terminal is one of the port's oldest properties, built in 1914. And so as far as the Fisherman's Memorial, actually, which was constructed in 1989.
I know. I went to the opening.
So so what we were just doing recently was just some renovations of the tile work to preserve the caulking. So we didn't add anything new, but we were just giving it a quick facelift.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It looks brand new.
Yeah. Well, great. Yeah, you know, that's
the
good.
Idea.
The
exactly.
Board should be happy.
Money well spent.
You know, Chef Terry, when I first moved to Seattle, there was a restaurant at Fisherman's Terminal called The Wharf.
Yeah.
And I used to go out there once in a while. It was a classic old place. That's, of course, when Polynesian was still in the South Lake Union. So I'm getting old.
Ballard has
changed.
All these
places are
gone. Ballard is changing.
So what's going on in the fishing world as far as the boats go? They're all coming back from Alaska at this point?
Yes, a lot of them are coming back from the salmon season, and we still have some folks that are out doing a little crab fishing, I mean, crabbing. Mm-hmm. But yes, the majority of our fishing boats are coming home for the season, and our recreational boats have went away as the summer closed out. But we should anticipate about 300 to 400 vessels that will be at Fisherman's Terminal, mm-hmm. which is home of the North Pacific Fishing Fleet, and we're proud to carry that title and building inventory and revenue for the city.
Uh-huh.
So,
I would imagine you get your share of the Bristol Bay sockeye that the netters get up there.
Yeah, every once in a while.
Every once in a while. It's a beautiful fishery.
Oh, yes.
Front fish roll.
Oh, yeah.
Paula, you, I'm sure, get your share of Bristol Bay sockeye, but you also get some local fish, some from these fishermen, right?
We do. We do
a lot of our salmon comes directly from the fishermen, and mm-hmm. we're real proud of that. And this summer, we featured a marbled king from the Washington coast, which is a spectacular fish that so few people have heard about. And it's really fun to kind of turn people on to this great, wonderful king salmon that's very affordable.
Well, tell us what it is. What's a marbled king?
A marbled king isn't a white king or a traditional red king, as you would normally see. Mm-hmm. It's something about the way these fish process the pigments in their diet. They come out marbled, a little bit of pink, a little bit of white. Actually kind of a beautiful fish. And because of that variation in color, they don't get the high ticket price that a traditional king would get.
No kidding.
And they eat the same, if some people claim they eat better, and they're abundant, unique to the Washington coast, which is really a nice thing. So you're supporting your local fishermen.
Right.
But they run May through September, give or take. And just a great fish that shouldn't be overlooked.
Could you help me debunk the rumor, Chef? I don't know how you feel about this, but fish markets tend to have a lot of hyperbole when it comes to ivory kings or marbled kings. They're all king salmon, right? It's just a chromosome color issue. Is that true or not true?
That is correct, yes. Although variations from where they're caught, that will make a difference.
Yeah. But that's true for the red as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that doesn't change anything. It's true. It's just a myth that it is better or less. So they're all the same. They just have a different pigmentation. That's all.
Or a personal preference.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it does sound lovely. Ivory king and, you know, things like that. So.
But it is good to support the white king or the marbled king. It's definitely nice to support
that as well. It's great fish. Either way,
fabulous.
What did you bring for us today?
Well, today I brought you a very interesting fish. And we're on the radio, so no one can see this. But
this little plastic bag of white, like noodles, almost like tilapia noodles.
Is it a flat fish with a shell in the back?
No.
No, it's not?
My second guess would be tilapia noodles, something like that.
And not tilapia, but that is pollock. And that is a pollock noodle. And it's a wonderful new product. Gluten-free, high in protein, low in calories. And like pasta, it's flavorless to a degree. Mm-hmm. So whatever way you want to prepare it, it takes on that flavor. And extremely filling. My husband, who eats far too much, couldn't put away a pound of those noodles as he thought he could.
There he goes.
Just that protein pack really
the bus.
Fills
I think
you up.
That's your ex-husband.
Yeah.
Dumber, this is a big deal at the port, isn't it? These pollock, making new items out of pollock and these ground fish or bottom fish that we get billions of pounds of.
Well, I'll tell you, having the opportunity to, tour Alaska and go to the plants and see what what our fishers are catching and how the plants are working very hard to process and use all of the fish, being very mindful of using the entire fish. This is a great creative way for them to be able to market this product.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally, it's delicious. Because it takes on just everything. Whatever you mix it with.
So is it processed fresh and stay fresh in the bag, or is it frozen?
Processed fresh and then frozen.
Okay. Good. So it's easy. You can buy that at the market and bring it home. And it doesn't take very long to thaw out because it's noodle shape.
That is correct.
And it's like fettuccine shape, so it's easy.
And the other thing Tom touched upon is that pollock is a highly sustainable fishery and highly underutilized.
People just
don't love fresh pollock fillets.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say that I blame them. Pollock, when we have all this other great fish in Seattle, but it's a nice way to use a very sustainable seafood.
But we should
seafood.
Remind people the reason of success on this planet will be if we are diversified in our diet.
Correct.
Yeah, if you only eat salmon, you're in trouble.
If you only eat salmon, we're going to be in serious trouble.
So we need
to diversify and eat all the fish in order to keep the fishery sustainable.
Correct.
So, it used to be all this pollock and things. You used to see it in the, like, surimi, right?
That is fake
crab and the fake this and that, fake scallops. They can make it into any shape. So this is just somewhat another version of that, or is this a different process?
No, I believe it's probably a little less processed than surimi. There's fewer ingredients in there, but I think if people tried it, it's a nice alternative for a low-calorie, high-protein meal, and I think kids will go for it.
Yeah.
If you want to get fish in your children's diet.
I agree.
I had this with a shoyu broth and the fresh shaved vegetables and delicious little bok choys, and it was a great product. I like it. Tell us about where the port is headed when it comes to Fisherman's Terminal and the downtown and Where I see the airport getting a lot of money. How much money are you getting?
Well, we're really proud to see that there is being in the Maritime Division. They were investing a lot of money in the redevelopment of our terminal. We've got several projects right now that are in the design phase. We may have heard some of your listeners may have heard of our Gateway project, which is an older bank building that's on our facility. That we're planning to demolish, and also two of our older net sheds, and take those down and make way for about a 60,000 square foot light industrial type of building for maritime businesses.
Huh.
And so that's about a just under 26 million dollar project. But like right now, that's in its design phase. We're really excited to talk about the Ship Supply Building, which is one of our oldest buildings on the facility, over 100 years old, which we're looking at redeveloping that into an innovation center.
I like that. Yeah. I got to tell you, I think that market area there is due for a seafood market of some sort that would be unique to Seattle. Mm. I just think you have so much space there that would be awesome. I saw the festival a couple of weeks ago set up there, but I think a Friday night seafood market would be tremendous. So I didn't mean to cut you off. He's giving me the choke sign over there. thank you so much for joining us. Get out there and eat a little seafood. Go down and visit the Wild Salmon Seafood Market down there. And don't forget that we own Fisherman's Terminal. The public of Seattle owns Fisherman's Terminal. It is a great place to hang out. Go take a stroll down the piers and look at all the fishing boats and get up close and personal with something that is, I think, unique and special in Seattle.
Yeah, please do.
I completely agree. It's a great public venue. Everyone should go out there and take a stroll on the docks.
Yeah, I agree. Up next, we're going to take a look at some odd trends popping up in the food world and give our hot takes on it. What do you think, Chef?
I'm looking forward to that.
On Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Thank you for joining us, Chef Terry.
Chef Tom.
Chef Tina. I can call you a chef now because you cook a lot more than you used to.
I do cook a lot. I think chef is using the term loosely, but I'll take it.
I agree with you.
All right. So you found some food trends online that you feel like are the talk of the day. And you know what makes me feel super old?
What?
Is when I see a trend come around in my cooking career for the fourth time.
Yep.
Deconstructed food. It's like, are you kidding me?
Are they still talking about this?
Well, right. It's been through a few times. Oh, anyway, go ahead.
It's like when my
I'm curious what a youngster like you thinks is a new trend.
Oh, God bless you for the youngster comment. I'm super young, everybody.
Yeah.
Super young.
Original voice of Radio Disney. We're all ears. Okay.
So it is interesting. I think that as you look around restaurants, especially in Seattle, people like to get hip and trendy, and we often wonder if these things are going to stay or go. So deconstructed foods, to your point, is...
Go.
Okay.
You asked. Terry, how do you feel about that?
Did you say go?
I said it's gone. I mean, it's been here and back.
It's been gone for... I thought it was gone for a long time.
Hmm. Who's old now?
It came and went like in and out kind of thing, you know, like it was nice and hot for 2 minutes and...
You're done with it. Done with it.
Well, I mean, the word itself, I think, is where people get confused. I think it's, you know, you want to make a deconstructed tartatin, well, call it something else. You know, call it apples and, you know, baked apple with caramel sauce and whatever you're doing.
Just stop using the word deconstructed.
I must say that one of the most disappointing deconstructed item I've ever had in my life was a bœuf bourguignon in a restaurant in Seattle. And they had deconstructed bœuf bourguignon, and I said, God, I got to try this. And it was very expensive. And I tried that, and I was like, what the heck is this supposed to mean?
Okay, give us the name. You can do it.
No, I'm not. But that's because I'm trashing it, so I'm not going to tell the name. But I thought it was completely ridiculous.
Sometimes using a word like deconstructed just makes it sort of sound fancy, and you can make
charge a few extra bucks for it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was also something different. It was not a bœuf bourguignon. It was a braised beef. They should have called it what it was, braised beef cubes, you know, with red wine sauce or whatever. But it was not a bœuf bourguignon. It was totally separated.
Okay. Anyway. We got it, Chef.
Yeah, well, mad. Still mad about that.
Still mad.
Still mad.
Look at that.
All right.
You could braise a beef with the steam coming out of his ears.
Write a letter, chef. Write a letter. All right. What about pickled fermented foods?
Kombucha, yeah, no, boy, that kimchi. Hasn't been hot for 20 years, has it? Kombucha, kimchi.
This
it's been hot
been
for 10 years.
And it's not going away.
It's not going away. No, it shouldn't. No. It's good for you.
Yeah.
I love it.
What about, I'm seeing this a lot, specialty flavors for ice cream and donuts. You know, there's Frankie and Joe's is doing a full plant-based ice cream menu. Molly Moon's, what's that other one from Portland? Straw and
Salt and straw, yeah.
They have like gold leaf in their ice cream or something like that.
Well, gold leaf is a new trend. It's coming back around. Of course, that was really big way back when. That's what I'm saying. We're old enough to have seen these trends come and go.
Mm-hmm.
So what it suggests is that we've seen it all. When you see them come back for the third time, we've seen it all.
Is there
next thing you know, we're going to have spa food.
Mm-hmm. Cuisine minceur is what they call it in France.
To your point, is there a trend that you like to see come back or that you hope stays longer next
for
time?
For me, personally, the fermentation and pickling thing that everyone is doing is awesome. I love it, and I think that it really helps balance out a diet. And if you look at the Korean diet and all, or even the Japanese diet with all the pickles that they add to their diet, I think it's a great trend, and to me, it's also sparks your palate a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's a vibrancy that comes out at the end of a dish that's really cool because you can make a nice rich stew, but if you put a little pickled vegetable on top, it really perks up the whole idea and cuts through that richness.
So the French would do the little lemon zest and or what is that called? I forget off the top of my head.
You're talking about the Italians now. The Italians make the osso buco topping.
Yeah, a little parsley and lemon zest, maybe a little fresh horseradish. I thought you had a version of that too. But it's all about a heavy dish that you perk the flavor with something
on
top.
Fresh herb and citrus or acids, you know, is very common to create that kind of sweet and sour, but not in a sugar sense, more in the richness of a dish, and then you top it and you have that brightness at the end, which is also good for your gut, by the way.
Tom, you spoke on a Future of Food panel at the GeekWire Summit, and they talked a lot about some of these more things that were more conscious, like the plant-based movement, things like that, and the future of food.
So I'm curious, as a vegan, I'll take it from there with you. I'll ask you the question. You know, we talked at the GeekWire about the Impossible Burger and that being now 40% of our burger sales where we offer it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lady on the same panel talking about her making plant-based chicken nuggets.
Yep.
As a vegan, is that where you want vegetarian food to go?
No.
You want some sort of manipulated imitation, processed, I mean, ultra-processed food to replace the meat in your diet?
Well, there is a real distinction between the vegan movement and the whole food plant-based movement. Mm-hmm. And kind of the separation there happens with the entry point. Many vegans, their entry point into their diet is really about animals. And often animals and environment, but primarily...
And animal care, right?
Animal
you don't want to eat an animal.
You don't want to eat an animal. And they take it pretty far. But they will eat processed foods like potato chips and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who chooses the whole, quote, whole food plant-based lifestyle or way of eating, is the entry point is health. And for me, the domino or the extra wonderful things that go along with that are animal welfare and sustainability, like caring about the planet. I feel like if I am, you know, always talking about how much I care about the environment and things like Pebble Mine, I want to eat more consciously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the whole food plant-based thing. But to your point about sort of flavor and trends and things like that, well, not really, because the processed foods aren't, A, very good for you, and B, also not wonderful for the environment, though the Impossible Burger is doing it.
Well, I mean, you're not a doctor. I don't know that you can say they're not good for you. I mean, we don't know. I mean, I don't know what the actual science is on that. But I do think it's kind of a funny... a trend line to see vegetarians or vegans go with these ultra processed things like Impossible Burger. I don't have anything against it. I ate one the other day. It's perfectly fine. Delicious.
I think if you want to try it, the idea is that it's going to help you sustain it because you're kind of crave a burger, and some people will fall off the edge of their diet if they,
So
it's kind of to keep you
eating. Kind of wanting it both ways at the same time.
Yeah. Right.
Another one you wrote down here is rainbow foods. And we often talk at Carlisle Room where we are kind of veg forward there about the rainbow platter. And that is when you are eating, make sure you get multiples of all the different colors on your plate. Certainly, I like certain differences in textures and temperatures at the same time. But I do think that there's different vitamin profiles that come with the different colors of produce.
Mm-hmm.
And that to eat a well-balanced vegetarian diet seems to me you want to eat the rainbow rather than just a big pile
of
sautéed greens. Right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's a hard one to keep mindful of because you tend to go with what you like. Mm-hmm. I love tomatoes, so I find myself eating way too many tomatoes.
I had a collard green ham, potato, and collard green soup last night for dinner that Jackie made.
Mm.
That's my idea of eating veggies.
Yeah.
You know, just little bits of ham, right? There's nothing. It's certainly not the center of the plate protein. Plenty of potatoes, plenty of collard greens, and a nice vegetable broth. It was delicious.
Yeah. That was one thing you said at the GeekWire Summit that I really thought was smart. Was just like, if you want to be mindful about this kind of thing, just lessen the portion of meat.
Yeah, by half.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was saying there's no way that they can catch up with plant-based proteins. Well, that's nonsense.
Right.
If people just ate half the amount of protein at the center of the plate, we'd be 50% done with the project.
Right. Right. So. Right.
Okay. Up next, we have your culinary quandaries, and we're going to answer them, huh?
That's right.
All right. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. Chef Janet's in the kitchen making a lot of noise. We like it here at the Hot Stove Society. Thank you, thank you. Our audience is ravenous. They're just waiting for these sandwiches. I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's because I'm ravenous, too. I only ate one bowl of soup last night, so I'm starving to death.
Yeah, this is what happened.
When you see a guy looking like me, can you ever believe that he's starving to death? I try to tell people, like, big people starve to death, too.
Well, the problem is we all need a meal at one time or another. So if you haven't had it, then you skip it, then the next one's going to be a long way away.
Exactly. Okay, we have questions or culinary quandaries. Tina, do you want to jump into these, or do you want me to take them on?
Sure thing. I got it right here.
Right.
First, we're going to hear from somebody right here in our studio audience. If you want to come and join us, go to hotstovesociety.com, and you can hop on the mic just like Jason from Burien here. Jason, what's your question?
Well, I'm part of a burger club. It's a bunch of comedy improvisers who once a month go to eat different burgers and at different restaurants, and we think your burger is one of our favorites. But I have
Lule or Luke? Which one? Lule or Luke?
Lule, yeah. We love that, and we've been there twice now.
Ooh.
Which we don't repeat usually.
You know, you're one of the few that's lived to tell this story.
Also, we've enjoyed some of yours as well, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
But so I have a constant argument with everybody because, and this comes from the discussion earlier of iceberg lettuce. I cannot stand any other lettuce on my burger other than iceberg. Mm-hmm. I think every other lettuce just gets destroyed by the burger. And that might be
the heat of the burger.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And it might be because I don't eat tomato. So that comes off and it ruins the lettuce. That's what recently came up during the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, and I'm always shocked when restaurants put these melty, delicious
Boston lettuce.
Exactly, and they're delicious, but they last like 3 minutes, and the second half of the burger, I'm pulling it off and throwing it away. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts is I'm not going to change because I don't like iceberg lettuce, so that's not going to change tomorrow. But I'm glad. I understand if you like something crunchy, yes. Maybe we could change to put gem lettuce, like those baby romaine, mm-hmm. you know, that would make a bigger texture on there, and that would serve the purpose of what you're saying, but I'm definitely not going iceberg. Not for my burger.
And, you know, at Dick's, they use a shredded iceberg, right? Mm-hmm. Dick's Burgers, and that does wilt also. One of my favorite burgers is Red Mill Burgers.
Yes.
And she always has put green leaf on her burgers, and it bugs me. That particular thing about the burger, I always get it without the lettuce, because I agree, it gets... Mm-hmm. Kind of, especially if you're taking it to go, it gets soggy. And if you can eat it like within 3 minutes of getting the burger, then it's fine. But outside of that, I find leafy lettuce, like green leaf or red leaf, to be too soggy.
No, so. We agree. And we also agree Red Mill is our favorite.
Oh, is it?
Yep. That is absolutely.
Good. That's a great burger.
Red Mill Burgers.
We don't know why. We keep comparing it against every burger, mm-hmm. even the expensive burgers, and mm-hmm. it's always the best.
Oh, there you go. She does a beautiful job. Her name is Babe
Good
Shepherd.
Choice.
She does a beautiful job. Of course, they have 3 units now, right? Inter Bay, Ballard is the Totem, Red Mill Totem mm-hmm. Fish House, and then, of course, the original on Greenwood. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you so much, Jason.
All right. Heading over to our Facebook page, Laura Lee Smith has a question about green tomatoes besides fried. She says it's late in the season, but she's got some. We aren't the only ones with an overabundance of green tomatoes. What do you do with them?
So for me, we're doing the same thing, right? We just had our first frost at Prosser Farm. We are picking green tomatoes like crazy. We have 100 5-gallon buckets of green tomatoes from our 3,500 tomato plants.
Wow.
And, of course, we had our final picks and all that kind of stuff of the ripe tomatoes. But now they're just going to get pickled. And they're going to be used on the Palace Kitchen burgers all winter long. They're pickled with toasted mustard seeds and sliced onions and a little turmeric for color. And I think that it's going to be delicious.
I think that's exactly where I was going to go. There's two choices. You pickle them or you jam them. You can make a tomato jam, a green tomato jam. Still a little bit of vinegar in there. I like my jam to have a slight bit of acid. But
sweet
sugar,
and sour, right?
Sugar,
yeah.
Vinegar, and I also put onions as well. I sweat the onions first, sliced onions, and I put in the jar with the green tomato. And it makes a great... I mean, it's very intriguing. The first time my mom is the one who introduced me to green tomato jam. And she said, oh, I made green tomato jam. I was like, what? And then I tried it, and I was like, wow, it's actually really delicious. Because it's a fruit. I mean, ultimately, you cook it down, and you make it into a jam. It's just... not different than any other fruit. Lots of water. You put it with onions, sugar, and a little bit of vinegar at the end. And then some fresh spices in there. And you're good.
I would argue that it's better than a lot of fruits because it brings its own acid.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so you have a head start on making that kind of sweet, sour.
And it goes in so many different ways. It can go great with a cheese plate. If you put a cheese plate out, tomato jam is great. If you put you're cooking a pork loin, you just put that on top of it as a chutney kind of idea. It works well as well. So it goes in many different ways.
So fear not, Laura Lee Smith. You have plenty to do with your green tomatoes.
That's right.
Laura Dragseth says, she's wondering about making sauerkraut. Do you have some tips and tricks for making sauerkraut?
Well, real sauerkraut, if you make it from scratch, is going to smell up the house a little bit. So I would say the trick is put it in the garage. Because your house going to smell for a little while. I mean, you have to get the cabbage to be sour. So, you know, you put your salt, you put your spices, and you put your cabbage in there, and you let it ferment, basically. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to cook that down. And I would recommend, when you cook it down, to use some very good beer. Not too hoppy, but very good beer. And then cook your sauerkraut with beer. It's delicious. Mm.
So I do mine. So I'm going to take mine after the sauerkraut. So you can buy sauerkraut at the grocery store.
Right.
So many options these days.
Right.
And I take mine. I put it in the pan, and I'll put it in with a little bit of, if I'm making roast pork to go with my, I'll put it in with a little pork bone
mm-hmm.
or a little couple, just cubes of bacon.
Sure.
This is not bacon sauerkraut. It's just a cube like putting in salt pork. You know,
right.
You just put it in as one little flavor profile. I put caraway seeds in. But the stock, really, cooking it down with the stock helps creams it a little bit.
Sure.
And so I'll finish that. And then whatever gravy I'm making for my pork roast goes right on top of my sauerkraut and dumplings when I'm serving that final dish. And that gravy that I usually make is that sweet onion gravy where I roast the onions underneath the pork roast and they get all brown and caramelized. That's the base of my roux. I add my flour to that and then use my stock to make an actual floured gravy, which are old-fashioned, but I still love them at certain points, right? I'm not all about the reduced sauces like you might be, but I like an old-fashioned gravy once in a while. Okay, thanks for all your questions. Thank you, Jason, for jumping up here on the mic. Next up, we find out just how well we know each other and learn a little bit about our culinary journeys along the way on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We're back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. We've got still much to do here today, so don't leave us anytime soon. We'd be so sad. We have the Baker's Corner with Chef Brittany Bartleben coming up. We've got Food for Thought Tasty Trivia ending the show, as we do every week. But first, we're going to jump into BF Chef.
BF.
So I know what BBF is. No, BFF is.
Mm-hmm.
But BF Chef.
Yep. You know, you two seem pretty much like BF Chef.
I love Chef Terry.
You do?
I love Chef Tom.
It's pretty darling. Oh, it's pretty darling. Yeah. So, and a lot of people ask me how you guys know each other and, you know, just like to learn a little bit more about it, you guys, and your relationship. So we thought we'd play a little game and see how well you actually do know each other.
Huh. Mm. Gonna revalue that friendship in a minute.
Flip it on its head a little bit. Mm-hmm. I know you guys met how long ago?
Let's just say 30 years ago.
More than that, but yes. In 1987, we met on August 1st.
It was a full moon.
No, it wasn't a full moon. It was a Friday, and I met him at Café Sport. I never forget that.
The crab was rising, and the goat was falling.
the chef who I was buying the restaurant from, Kevin McKenzie, said, "Do you want to meet the local chef?" I'm like, "Absolutely." He's the first chef I met.
And it was love ever since.
I've been teaching him how to cook ever since.
It was not.
I really feel like it's going to stick one of these days.
You can bring a horse to water, chef. You can bring a horse to water.
You use too much flour.
Okay, so here's how it's going to go. I'm going to ask you, Chef Tom, a question about Terry and vice versa. So your first question is, what was Terry's first job in the restaurant world? And what was his role?
He was an apprentice in France.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
13 or 14 year old.
14.
What about?
I did 2 year apprenticeship, and it was something I would never recommend to anybody to go the route I went. I would say stay in school till you're 16 and get a better apprenticeship going.
Well, here's what I would
find somebody who's actually a better place.
What I learned from you, Terry, is what my inclination was, is that chefs who throw pans or throw insults are really not chefs you want to learn how to cook from.
That is correct. To me, you're missing something. I don't care how good you are, you're not that good if you are not capable of dealing with people. You know, it's like it's part of the job of being a chef. You have to be a, you know, like a papa to everybody as well. So, you know, anyway. Yes, that is correct.
Chef Terry, then, the same question for you about Chef Tom Douglas. What was Tom's first job in the restaurant world, and what was his role?
Hotel DuPont, and he was studied as a dishwasher, right?
I was just above that. I was called a cook's helper.
Cook's helper, yeah.
Which, in the hotel business, if you remember, they always give you the lower title and make you, because they want to pay you the lower title,
right,
but make you do the work of the guy above
you. That is correct.
So, yeah, that's
hey, come
very
here.
Typical.
You're the dishwasher. Come here. You need to grill something.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I was running the fanciest dining room in downtown Wilmington, Delaware, at the Hotel DuPont, the Brandywine Room, filled with Andrew Wyeth paintings, you know, millions and millions of dollars for the paintings on the wall. And here I was. I'd been cooking for a month, and I was running the kitchen. It's like, oh, boy, you're desperate.
This is my most fun game ever.
You know what's funny is still today I read resumes of cooks who apply, and you look at their resume, and they go, oh, I went to school at, such culinary school. And then they go, and I was a chef. And I was a sous chef, and I'm like, wait, that's the word upside down here. You're in charge of the kitchen, and not in charge of the kitchen, and then I was a line cook, and I'm looking for a breakfast position, and I'm like, there's something wrong with your resume, brother.
Yeah. I was 17 years old. I had no business being in that kitchen.
No, of course
not. But I was a hard worker.
No, exactly.
Always have been.
Yep.
Yep.
All right, Chef Tom Douglas, what is Chef Terry's signature dish?
Well, I think that's all sorts of things, because it depends on which restaurant he's in, like the caviar egg at Rover's. But for me, at Luke, it's the beef bourguignon. Mm-hmm. At Lulay, I don't really know. I don't go to Lulay a lot because it's right in my wheelhouse. If I'm going to go to a restaurant like Lulay, it's like I'd just soon go to one of mine, because believe it or not, it's hard to get to mine enough to understand or to keep an eye on what's going on.
Right.
Like, but if I'm out at the Broadmoor Golf Club or something, I'll go to Luke much more than I go to Lulay, because it's over in that neighborhood, right?
Right.
So, but if I had to guess, those would be my two things.
The scrambled egg is still the king at Lulay.
Yeah.
The scrambled egg and caviar is still the king at Lulay, yes.
What would you say Chef Tom's signature dish is, Terry?
Coconut cream pie is obviously the biggest signature dish he's had over his life. I mean, when the president calls and says, that was the best pie I've ever had.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can't top that one yet. I've been trying.
He wasn't the president. I will say he wasn't the president at the time. He was just a senator at the time. Mr. Obama. I did get it into his limo, and then he left me a voicemail when voicemail still happened, saying, dude, that pie was off the hook. And so there you go. That was my
Okay, what, Chef Tom Douglas, what would you say is Thierry's least favorite ingredient to cook with?
A Dick's burger. I don't feel like he can go anywhere with that. Least favorite ingredient to cook with? Savory or sweet?
Let's say savory.
Well, I know he loves sea urchin, which I can't stand.
That wouldn't be my
honestly. I like for me. I know exactly what mine is, but I don't know that I know that.
I know which one is yours too.
Yeah, of course you do.
Your least favorite.
But I'm more vocal about my dislikes than Chef Thierry is, unless it's American fast
well,
food.
Well, no. To me, it would be anything that is junky that I don't have to use.
Yeah, so I got it right. Dick's burger. Yeah.
I mean, anything that's
personally, I think that's high dining. High fair person.
You know what? I've always said if I don't have to, I just won't.
I told you my deal on Dick's, right?
Yes.
If I drive by a Dick's and there's no line, I don't go. Because then you're going to get that wilted lettuce that we talked about earlier. You're going to get something that's been sitting there. But when you walk by a Dick's and it's got a big line, I just jump right into the line because I know that those burgers are going to be crispy edged. The slaw is going to be good. The little lettuce slaw is going to be good. It's going to be right on the money. The bun's going to still have a little crisp on it.
I will wait in line for a good glass of champagne, but I won't wait in line for
okay,
okay. Sorry, brother.
And hence your differences.
I can tell you what Tom doesn't like. Okra. He hates
oh, yeah.
Okra.
Well, of many things I don't like. Beets, okra.
Yeah, but I mean, okra is probably higher yeah. than beets because you can actually eat beets. But
eating okra is like having a cold.
Oh!
All right, I'm going to go ahead and go to the next question. Chef, if Thierry was not a chef, what would he be doing?
He'd be a rock and roll star. He loves to sing and dance and do all that sort of thing. And he's not shy about it one bit. There's not a chance I could do what he does. He goes out to talk to every table. I'm shy. I don't go out and cold call on tables. It's just not my nature. We're very different that way.
I just love life, and I like to see smiles on people's faces.
Yes.
Yes, when I was 9 years old, I told my dad, he said, what do you want to do? Because, well, anyway, back then you ask at a very young age, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, I want to be a singer, dancer, entertainer. That's what I told my dad. I was 9 years old, living in a small town in France. And he looked at me, he said, well, that's great. You do that on Sunday. But he said, what are you going to do during the week? Totally shattered my dream. It's like, man, I thought this was a job. No.
All right, no, before we go, I know we have a little bit of time. What would Chef Tom Douglas do if he wasn't being a chef?
excuse me. He would be on the boards. Definitely musical 101. This guy knows every musical in the world.
Yeah, I'd be a stagehand. Yeah.
You would be definitely on stage somewhere.
And then I always had crushes on the leading ladies. And so yep. Diane Fratantoni was a senior when I was a freshman in high school. Oh, my
dreamy.
God. She was dreamy. Totally dreamy.
What play?
She was Eliza in My Fair Lady. Mm. Was the one that I fell in love with her. Yeah. Totally dreamy.
All right.
Sure glad you had to bring that up. Now I have tears in my eyes.
Sorry, Jackie.
Up next, it's time for the Baker's Corner with Chef Brittany Bartleben on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Vigorous applause. It's time for the Baker's Corner with Chef Brittany Bartleben from the Dahlia Bakery and Dahlia Lounge. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for
Hello,
having
Brittany.
Me.
Hello.
Good to have you back. Let's see. We're going to talk kids.
We sure are.
And, you know, that's usually when I leave the room.
Yep. If I were smart, I'd leave the room, too.
Quick story yeah. I love about Tom. You know, we always talk about what do you know about Tom. Easter, he makes eggs. He takes those plastic eggs. He puts money in it so the kids can hear the jiggling in it. But he glued them with heavy glue.
Super glue,
so they can't open the...
So he has a bunch of frustrated kids.
So he makes them cry.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, who does that?
But I think that's kind of awesome, actually.
I don't know what to say.
I'm like, who does that? Everybody goes, ooh, I love
that. You
know
what? They had it coming.
You know, the sad news is my daughter's talking about starting a family.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Grandpa Tom. Grandpa's. I mean, that's the best
Tom.
Job. You still don't look ready.
How did your dad deal with it?
He was my kid was the third grandchild, uh-huh. And so he's an old pro at this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He got used to it.
He was delighted. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I worked my way through having a daughter.
Uh-huh.
Those first 10 years, probably, I worked constantly to get our business up and running.
Right.
And I'm not making excuses, but that is what I did.
Yeah.
And if I didn't have a situation where Jackie could stay at home or be more in charge of
right.
that, then I couldn't have done that. But,
yeah.
But so I missed all that age, and I was always
yeah.
fine with that.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, when I did kind of step in more, I felt like every year she got older was better for me. I enjoy her. Like right now, she's working for our company. She's almost 30 years old.
She's a real grown-up now.
And I love
yeah.
her. We have breakfast every Thursday morning.
Yeah.
We sit, you know, desks nearby. I love talking to my adult child.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, grandpa years
really
are pretty great, too, because you can deal with the baby and then give them back when they start being a baby.
That's a great point.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so tell us about your kids' class.
Yeah, I'm doing this again because I'm crazy. We did our first kids' baking class back in April, and so we're revising it for our October 26th class. We're having a Halloween party.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have costume contests. Everybody's going to dress up. We're going to have a photo booth. We're going to have a guts bar. So, you know,
ball.
All food things, but they're going to blindfold and, you know, we're going to...
That look like guts, like gummy worms?
Recreate, yeah. Yeah. Like cooked spaghetti will be intestines,
Ooh.
Things like that. We're getting real creative with it.
So how old are the kids?
9 to 12 years old.
Okay.
And we still have a few slots left over. I think maybe like 4 or 5 slots mm-hmm. left over. So mm-hmm. hoping to fill that up. And we're going to be doing some hands-on things. They're going to learn how to make Monster Munch, which is sort of a sweeter, more junk foody version of the Dahlia Bakery granola.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of all the like dried fruit and healthy things in there, we're adding like chocolate chips and things like that.
You know what I love in my granola?
What?
Beef jerky.
I can totally get with that.
And cheese,
I'm super behind
cheese
that.
Cheese cubes and beef
cheese cubes,
jerky.
Yeah. Salty sweet. Love that.
Okay.
So they're going to learn how to basically make granola.
You guys eat the weirdest granola ever.
Well, it's like the caramel corn with the Landjager
with
in
the
there.
Landjager.
Yeah,
I bought
I'm
the
so
stuff at Costco, the Oberto snack
mm-hmm.
pack. And it's,
yeah.
It's like granola almost, but with beef jerky and...
Yeah,
and,
I get the idea. Just
yeah.
It's
okay,
good
so
stuff.
Anyway.
So we're going to do Monster Munch. We're going to do mummies. They're going to make little mummies. So they're going to learn cream cheese pie dough. And we're going to take the Bavarian meats, knackwurst sausages, and then they're going to wrap the pie dough around there
uh-huh.
to create little mummies. They're super
yeah.
cute.
Cool.
So in other words, pigs in a blanket.
Pigs in a blanket. Exactly. But, you know, Halloween spin on mm-hmm. all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to have a little cupcake decorating party. We're calling them creepy crawly cupcakes because they're going to put, you know, chocolate dirt on there, meaning, you know, ground up truffle cookies
mm-hmm.
and
tombstones.
Gummy worms and tombstones. Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And then it's just basically a big old party after that with music and everything. It's going
to
be super fun.
And, man, I can't wait till the parents come and pick up their kid all wired up on sugar.
I know.
It's going to be
yeah.
nice.
Yeah, we'll have candy and everything. I mean, it was chaos in here for the one back in the spring,
mm-hmm.
So I can just imagine it's going to be... We're doing a smaller cap limit, so it won't be quite so crazy. And we're going to have, like, every adult we know in the room helping us. But, yeah, it should be really fun.
And is your kid coming?
Oh, no.
No.
No. He's going to stay home with Dad. He's a little young. To be running around here.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, we're really excited. And some of these things we're going to be serving at the bakery for Halloween as well. We'll be serving the Monster Munch. And then mm-hmm. as well, we've got a lot of other really cool things. We've got our pumpkin whoopie pie that we bring back every year.
So cupcake, let me touch on cupcake mm-hmm. a little bit because I've actually never made cupcakes, but I'm sure I'm one of the few people who've never made cupcakes. But most people, I mean, a lot of people buy them.
Yeah.
You just have to go to the store. There's a box called Duncan Hines and just... Got little sprinkles in it.
Well,
just,
what I was going to talk about, Tom, was about making them yourself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
If you
this
can make
is
cat
the time of
cake
the year
batter,
to make
yeah.
it yourself.
Yeah.
Since you're putting all, you know, all kind
yeah.
of sugar on top.
Yeah, yeah. It's they're very easy. If you can make a cake, you can make a cupcake. It's the exact same thing. It just takes less time to bake.
Right.
So, yeah. And I think you can have more fun with them too. A cake, start to finish, decorating it, all of that is sort of. It's an undertaking. It's fun
yeah.
and everything, but
that's
this
a Halloween joke. An undertaking.
An undertake, exactly. but this is a little more of an easy afternoon, I think, to
yeah,
just
yeah,
make,
yeah.
make and decorate.
What I
cupcakes.
Like it is that when you screw one up, you can just start again.
Exactly.
Like, instead of a big cake where you're like,
yeah,
oh
you're,
my God, what do
yeah,
I do now?
You've got a dozen other
yeah.
ones
mm-hmm.
to play with, and they're great for kids. It's
mm-hmm.
they can really get creative. All the sprinkles and all the toppings that are there.
You make
for them,
them
to
do
play
icing
with.
Too.
We're going to have them do the icing. We're probably going to make the icing for them and give them piping bags because at this point, I mean, we'll be 4 hours into the class. It's a long class, too.
I've got to make sure I'm golfing in Phoenix.
If I were you, I would be out of the state, if possible. Yeah,
I'm not available. My phone is off.
Yeah, okay, because I will recruit you.
So sorry.
Tell us another trick or two people can surprise their guests with for a Halloween treat. Is there a type of s'more, like pumpkin spice s'mores? Or
there's always a s'more for every occasion, Mike. And I love the pumpkin spice s'more idea. You know, we were doing s'mores a lot over the summer, but I think winter is a wonderful time to do them as well. If you've got a roaring fire or something like that going.
I think that would be a cool thing to put outside your door for kids to pick up on Halloween night. If you were making a bunch of s'mores, little pumpkin spice, I think that would be totally delicious.
You know, it would never occur to me to do anything homemade because when I was a kid, you know, we had the big razor blade scares in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And ever since then, it's like whole packaging, sealed, everything's...
Yeah.
Like, remember, because popcorn balls used to be huge.
What a sad world.
Yeah, you can't trust people anymore.
Popcorn balls used to be a huge thing, right? You always hated going to the house that had popcorn balls because you wanted the house that had Reese's or milk. Hershey bars or something like that.
Now the big warning is edible marijuana candies. People think for some reason they're going to give that to other people's kids or I don't know. So
I don't think I would never let my kid eat like a home.
No, I get it. No. And I remember my kids coming back with the loot, you know, big bag, and laying everything down on the floor and counting everything and sold them up. And it was a big thing.
It's a huge thing. I remember my dad stealing all my fun-sized candy bars.
Yeah, and I would walk in and I'd go, Kit Kat.
You're the one who said he loved kids.
Not enough to let them have their candy. He had a special freezer in the garage that he would hole away all those candy bars.
I was telling Terry earlier in the show, my favorite thing is the adults on Halloween when they're chaperoning the kids around.
Yeah.
I have a tray of mini booze bottles.
Oh, you're a good man.
And we share a little toast to this night being almost over.
The reaction of the mother, you're a good man.
You are a good man. And the night they have ahead of them of trying to get their kid to go to sleep.
Either a little Jack Daniels or a little Maker's Mark or something like that.
That is a wonderful thing
to
do.
And when they're my neighbors, I was telling Terry that they make me have one with them. And so I'm totally sloshed.
Yes,
Of Halloween.
It's Halloween.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's party time.
There you go.
Yeah.
So that's how I would probably have to approach the kids' class.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I'm sure when it's over, we will definitely have a round of shots.
What about candy corn?
Children of the Caramel Corn?
I hate candy corn.
Candy corn is disgusting. Caramel corn, however, is delicious.
Okay.
I think candy corn is an awful, awful thing, and I'm with you on that. And
that's so surprising to me because you love trashy.
I love trashy things, but that might be you found the thing that is too
really?
Trash. And they also have the pumpkin ones.
I know. I hate it in every shape it comes. Yeah, every color that all tastes bad, like hydrogenated corn syrup or something.
I
like
love the fun size candy bars though, and those are garbage. So you know,
I'm not familiar with those
candy corn.
No, I'm familiar with caramel corn, but not candy corn. I've never seen those.
It's like a triangular-shaped candy, and it's got three colors, orange, white, and yellow or something like that, and it tastes awful.
Yeah. Just the colors taste
awful. It's like candy corns and Necco wafers. There should just be this graveyard of horrible candy that they should never inflict
on us. I think I read that the Necco plant is out of business.
Good.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah, you might as well eat a Tums if you're going to eat one.
Exactly. It's exactly like a Tums. It's disgusting.
Okay, so any other things before we break about Halloween that you want to get off your chest?
Get to the bakery. We've got some really fun things starting the week of the 26th. We'll have all sorts of fun little specials. Like I mentioned, Children of the Caramel Corn. We'll have our birthday cookies that will be actually dressed up in a Halloween sprinkle situation. We're calling them Death Day cookies. And decorated sugar cookies, all that stuff.
That's my favorite. I love those.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to like the ones with the big, thick icing layer, but I do
flooded.
Love... But what's nice about our sugar cookies is that they're actually cooked enough.
Exactly.
They actually have some brown on them. I hate the ones that are still white, just like taste like flour, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I got a lot of things off my chest there. That was awesome. up next, chef here from the Hot Stove Society, Janet, is going to join us for Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia on Cairo Radio. 97.3 FM. We are back in the Seattle kitchen. It's time for Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia. I'm very excited today because Chef Janet here from the Hot Stove is going to come over, and she was talking smack before she got on the air. I do believe if the folks in the audience would prefer that Chef Terry or I won, please raise your hands and clap right now.
I don't know why you're doing that to the people. All right. It's time for Tasty Trivia Challenge. Here's how the game is played. Each of you will get 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner. Whoever gets the least amount of answers correct is the loser. And that person needs to give something away, some prized possession of yours, to someone who loves our show. Today you will be playing for Jason from Burien. He's in our studio audience today and was brave enough to come up to the microphone and talk to y'all about hamburgers.
All right.
So thank you, Jason. So, Chef Terry, should you lose, what will you give to Jason?
Well, Jason mentioned the burger at Lule, and he loved it. So now I'm going to make him try the one at Luc. Two burgers at Luc. Burger for
nice.
Two.
Burger for two.
At Luc. So whenever you want, you're ready, you let us know, and we'll get your information. And
delightful.
Well, let's see, of course, if I lose.
Not win. Not
you know
win,
what?
If.
No matter what, I think I'm going to give you the burger. You get, you're part of a burger club. Yes.
All right, Chef Janet.
Hot Stove Society. I will be giving away, should I be unfortunate enough to lose, for 4 tickets to our lunch club on October 31st.
Halloween.
It is Halloween, but it is Fall Lunch Club Italy with Chef Bridget Charters. So 4 tickets
nice.
For lunch club.
So fun. Mm. That's a good one. Mm. Chef Tom Douglas, should you lose today, what will you give to Jason?
Well, you know, we have a delicious burger at the Brave Horse Tavern, and we also have an Impossible Burger there, which might be interesting. And, you know, 10% of the people that order the Impossible Burger, which is plant-based, order it with bacon and cheese. And then the other thing that we have there is our fried chicken burger. So you're going to get one of each, and you can tell me which you like best.
Well, let's see what happens. Who would like to go first?
I'll start.
All right, Chef Thierry. True or false, the dish pan perdu is the most closely related to the breakfast classic waffles.
No.
Mm,
it is not.
What is it?
It's pain perdu is French toast.
Right, correct. That seemed like an easy one for you. I feel like that was
it is
fair.
Actually easy.
All right, Chef, question number 2. Which of the following is not a member of the cashew family? Pistachios, poison ivy, cashews, or Brazil nuts?
I'm going to go with Brazilian nuts.
You are correct. Brazil nuts is the answer.
Woo!
2 for 2. All right, question number 3. How much does a peck weigh? 2 dry quarts, half of a bushel, 8 dry quarts, or 2 bushels?
I'm going to go with a half bushel.
The answer is 8 dry quarts.
Ooh. I was wrong last week when I sang the song then.
I was just going to say,
I love you.
I knew that was coming.
A bushel and a peck. A bushel and a peck and a hug around the neck.
Boo. So, I'm sorry. Did you get your facts right there, or am I winning?
I thought a peck was a half a bushel, but it's
me too.
Apparently it's
8
not.
Dry quarts.
I did too.
Next question.
We'll fact check that. Sean Fox, please fact check. Fact check on aisle 9. All right, question number 4 for you, Chef. If a rib chop or steak has been Frenched, what has been done to the meat? Has it been flame broiled on both sides until a fine crust has formed? Marinated in a full-bodied red wine before finished in the oven on a bed of vegetables? The bone of the meat has been cleaned of fats and marrow, or pan-seared in butter with a mirepoix?
Number 3.
Which was what?
The bone's been cleaned.
Correct. Good job. All right. Your last question. 3 correct and 1 correct. Good job. Which of the following fish is not a white fish? Cod, swordfish, haddock, or pollock?
Swordfish.
Correct. 4
wow,
out of 5. Wow,
Jeffy, nice job.
Nice.
4 out of 5.
Good job.
Bravo.
Janet.
Ooh.
All right.
Pressure's
Janet.
On.
Janet. 4 is the number to beat today.
Mm-hmm.
Commonly serving a fish a la Florentine means what? You have some options. It's served on a bed of spinach with Mornay sauce, a fish topped with a gravy made with wine, sage, rosemary, and garlic, a white bean red sauce is commonly present on the plate, or anything grilled over a wood fire finished with a pecorino before plating.
Option 1.
Yes.
You are correct. Served on a bed of spinach.
Spinach.
All right, question number 2, Chef Janet. The primary difference between shallow frying and deep frying is what? You have some options.
Thank you.
Deep frying requires the use of vegetable oil specifically, and shallow frying can use any oil. That's one option. Shallow frying is primarily used for vegetables, while deep frying is mostly used for meat. In shallow frying, the cooked objects are only partially in the oil, while in deep frying, they're submerged. Or deep frying takes on the flavor of the oil it is cooked in, and shallow frying allows the ingredients to maintain their flavors.
Hmm. It's between one and three, and I'm going to go with one.
Oh, three.
Or three. I think I'll go with three.
Sorry.
You're nuts.
The answer was C.
Yes, three.
Three. Yep. C.
All right, question number three. True or false? Chateaubriand also refers to pork. Is that true or false?
False.
Correct. Your next question. The minimal amount of time required to make a traditional brown stock is what? 1 hour, 10 hours, 8 hours, or 5 hours?
I would say...
Somebody said it.
Five.
Correct. Five is the answer. Thanks,
nice.
Audience.
Boy, that feels like cheating to me.
But oh, wow. You know.
I would never do that.
Chef Janet, you need this one to tie with Chef Terry. Which of the following cheeses has the highest melting point? Ooh. Is it halloumi, mozzarella, cheddar, or comté?
Halloumi.
Halloumi's the answer. That's a tie right there.
Yeah.
All right. Chef Tom, you need a perfect score in order to win this quiz today. A chiffonade knife technique is most commonly used to what? Butterfly meat, fillet a salmon, mince vegetables and fruits, or cut a garnish for a dish?
I'll say cut a garnish for a dish.
Correct. Your next question, true or false? Most grocery store bananas are clones of each other.
True.
Correct. Wow. Question number three. Traditional black garlic gains its famous color and flavor through which of the following process? Broiling, caramelization, or fermentation?
Fermentation.
Correct. That's three for three.
Ooh, he's on the roll.
Mm. According to America's Test Kitchen, which of the following additions can help remedy a dish that is too salty? Honey, fresh herbs, olive oil, or cayenne?
Too salty. What do you guys think?
Oh, I'm going to go with the cayenne.
I'm going to go with honey.
I'm going with...
Tom, you're right.
Yeah. Good job.
You asked and everybody said everything but honey.
I know my audience.
For a perfect score, cheese and tofu have more in common than you would expect. Which of the following relates tofu to cheese? They have a similar melting point. They have a similar fat to protein ratio on average. They are both formed with the separation of curds and whey in a milk byproduct, or they have a nearly identical shelf life.
Number three.
The answer is they both form with the separation of curds and whey in a milk product.
Right. That's what he said.
Some people call that a perfect score.
Yes!
Thank you very much. Looks like we need a slap off.
All right, Jim. Hey, it's
between Dang.
All right.
Okay.
There has been something very controversial happening today on this Tasty Trivia Challenge. It seems the tide has turned. What has happened, Sean Fox?
I made a mistake while writing it, and Terry is actually correct.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh,
on what?
Five.
On the peck?
Yes, so eight dry quarts or half a bushel is what a peck weighs.
Ah, there you go.
So
my song was right.
Your song was right, yeah. And my score is the same as yours.
That means Tom and Terry with a perfect score. I'm sorry, Janet. Oh. 4 out of 5 correct makes you the loser. Jason now wins 4 tickets to brunch, to Lunch Club here at Hot Stove Society.
Yay, Jason, we go.
If you want to be part of the show like King Jason, you can join the community on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen or come right on down here. It's produced. The show is produced by our friends at Large Media. It's LARJ Media. And our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. And today our production assistant was Sean Two. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to HotStoveSociety.com and buy tickets for only $20. It comes with breakfast and steaming hot coffee. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3, you can also listen via podcast. Just subscribe to Seattle Kitchen on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening.